Well, here we are, ordinary church, ordinary Sunday, you and your ordinary pews to hear an ordinary sermon. Some of you get where I'm going with this. Others of you feel like there's something you're missing. I can feel all of you wishing that that was funnier. It's not funny because it's actually not a joke. We are in a season of the church year called Ordinary Time. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about it. I know I'm taking a risk talking about Ordinary Time, mansplaining to you the church year. I can feel, you know, it's not something that you were thinking a lot about this week. Maybe some of you, Neil, you know, fresh out of seminary, unjaded, holy, earnest, sincere. The rest of you, though, we're not thinking about the church year this week. You were thinking about the stuff going on in your life. You were thinking about the fact that your mom has dementia and you're not sure how long she can stay in her house. You were thinking about the fact that your career has stalled and landed in a place you didn't expect. You were thinking about the fact that you probably need to see someone about the depression because it's not clearing on its own this time. You're thinking about your kids who are, not as perfect as your sister's kids. Whatever it is, you were thinking about life's heartaches. You were with the Supremes. 1966, St. Diana. In Can't Hurry Love, which was recorded awesomely by Phil Collins, but you need to go back to the original, and they sing. And you know the chorus, you know, can't hurry love, you just have to wait. Stop singing it in your head, back to the sermon. But in one of the verses, they ask, how many heartaches must I stand? How many heartaches must I stand before I find the love to let me live again? See, you just thought it was a Motown pop song, but that is a profound question. How many heartaches must I stand? And that's where a lot of you are living. And it is in that context that I think ordinary time matters. So we're going to talk a little bit about ordinary time, if you will permit me a word of education about the church year. And then we're going to talk about, for ordinary time, why for us ordinary people, ordinary Jesus matters. And then we'll come back to the Supremes. So, ordinary time. Why is it called that first? Why is it called ordinary time? It's called that because these Sundays are ordered. They are numbered. It's the second Sunday after Pentecost. And you will see that as we go through the season, every Sunday will be called the number that it is after Pentecost. Next will be third, then fourth. We will go all the way to the 27th Sunday after Pentecost. The Sunday after Thanksgiving, we will be in ordinary time for over half the year. And so it's called that because the Sundays are numbered, quite simply. It's not a fancy word, it just means ordered. But there is a sense in which I think this season of ordinary time, intentionally by the church, is ordinary in that other, more familiar sense of the word, just ordinary. Not extraordinary, just ordinary. We will be walking with Jesus through the season of ordinary time as he is with ordinary people in their ordinary lives. This is not a season in the church year where we have those big Jesus events. I do this with the flappy sleeves to draw attention. Big Jesus events. There's no Christmas, there's no Easter, no angelic appearances to announce things. It's just Jesus mostly walking through the dusty roads of Galilee. And we'll be in the Gospel of Mark for the season, seeing him interact with ordinary people. We'll dip our toe in John for a little bit, but mostly we'll be in the Gospel of Mark, seeing Jesus interact with ordinary people in their ordinary lives, looking himself, for all the world, like an ordinary person. So that's my little bit on ordinary time, ordered Sundays, numbered Jesus in Galilee with folks. And that's what we see in Mark today. The Gospel of Mark, it's early in the story. was baptized, called some disciples out into ministry, and now Jesus, at the end of chapter 2, in the beginning of chapter 3, is interacting with ordinary people. And in this story, there's two specific groups I want to talk about, or kinds of people. In the first story, there are the disciples walking through the grain fields, quite likely to the tune of Sting's Fields of Gold. And it's all about keeping you awake. That's all I'm doing here. And the second story is an interaction of Jesus healing somebody. So we have two kinds of ordinary people, which I think metaphorically, if you'll permit me, connect with everybody here. These two kinds of people are the hungry and the hurt. The hungry and the hurt. I want to talk about these ordinary people. And I think, just beginning to say, we're all hungry. And not just for a Slim Jim. We're hungry on a deep and existential level. People are so desperate for peace. It's probably 80% of the time when I ask people what I can pray for them, they say peace. People just want some rest. People want to have at least a moment where it kind of feels like, this is why Calgon Take Me Away was such an effective ad campaign, because everybody just wants a moment of peace. This is why you love your car and why public transportation will never take off in the United States, because that's your little sanctuary. That's your moment of peace of NPR or classic rock or country and western or silence, whatever. That's your place. Everybody wants some peace. Because really, in our lives, we are more like the Jeffersons, but a nihilistic version of it. Remember the Jeffersons? 1970s, groundbreaking sitcom that dealt with race and politics and all kinds of stuff. And in the Jeffersons, the theme song, now we're up in the big leagues, you know, made it to the top of the hill. But really, we're the nihilistic version. None of us are in the big leagues. It's like the dark version of the Jeffersons. None of us in the big leagues. We're still climbing up the hill and have never reached the top. But it seems like everybody else has. And what's amazing is that even people that look like they've reached the top, even they are comparing themselves to other people that have reached higher peaks than they have. And there's all these ways in which we're aware that we are just not where we want to be. With apologies to Kanye and Daft Punk, we want to be better, faster, and stronger. And we ain't. And so there's this hunger, there's this dissatisfaction. We wish that we could be valued apart from our performance. We wish that people cared about us with no relation to our appearance. I mean, don't you wish you could let yourself go? I mean, the gym is exhausting. This counting calories just erodes my will to live. But we are all so concerned with things that on your deathbed will not matter one whit. And we're exhausted. And we're hungry. And we're hurt. We're hurt. You'd be amazed at the number of people that are carrying deep pain and guilt. And they've been carrying it for decades. And they may think that God might, in his mercy, be able to forgive, but they just can't forgive themselves. And it's the last thing they think about before they go to sleep, and it's the first thing on their mind when they wake up in the morning. Or maybe it's some childhood trauma or pain that is with you all the time. Maybe it's chronic physical pain. Maybe it's emotional pain. I don't know what it is, but most people are carrying at least one major hurt, if not more. If you want to see an example that will break your heart, watch I, Tonya, the film about Tonya Harding. Remember Tonya versus Nancy Kerrigan in the mid-1990s? The whole thing, and Nancy Kerrigan was wonderful and Tonya Harding was vilified. Watch I, Tonya, and your heart will break with compassion if you see how she grew up. So we're all carrying hurt. We're hungry and we're hurting. Ordinary people. And so we turn to Jesus. Mark, end of chapter 2, beginning of chapter 3, in these two stories where Jesus interacts with people who are hungry and hurt. And now there's a third kind of person in those stories, and they kind of represent religious folks, the Pharisees. And to these hungry and hurt people, their biggest question for the Lord is, well, with hungry and hurt people, do they deserve healing? Do they deserve help? Are they allowed to receive it? You know, if you haven't noticed, the church is very concerned with who is allowed to do what and who's not allowed to do it and who's doing things that aren't allowed. The church is very vocal about this, very concerned when people do things that aren't allowed. And maybe they have a point, but they're very, very worried about any time somebody does something out of bounds. And any time something bad happens, usually they say, well, it was deserved. All this question of merit. And this is what the Pharisees say when the disciples eat grain on the Sabbath. You know, that's not allowed. Exodus chapter 20. Or when the withered hand is healed on the Sabbath. That's not allowed, Jesus. Come back tomorrow and you can do it. But today it's not allowed. The most important thing is following the rules. And you got to give them, credit where credit is due. The rules were there. They were in the scriptures. Don't do any work on the Sabbath. And we'll define that as healing, they said. Don't reap on the Sabbath. You can't harvest your field. And we'll include even picking a single head of grain. We'll take God's rules seriously. But enter Jesus. And he looks at these situations where people are hurting and where people are hungry, and he rewrites the rules. He says, what's more important than the rules are the people. The rules weren't made for people, or the people weren't made to follow rules. These rules, the Sabbath in this case, was given as a gift. And now you're using it to oppress and control. And Jesus breaks the rules. And what I want to say about this is that I don't like it. I mean, I would like everybody to follow the rules. I'd like myself to follow the rules. I wish I could tell you to follow the rules. We see how that's going. It's frustrating. Jesus doesn't fit the mold of a good religious leader who comes and tells everybody to straighten up and fly right. He seems to be off script with what the church of today might want. But in these cases, he seems to be much more concerned with the people who are hungry and hurt than to be a stickler about following the rules. The main thing here, the main point for us today, us ordinary, hungry, and hurting people, is that what God does when he comes to you in your ordinary life is he has compassion and he has mercy and he seems to be much more concerned with you, brothers and sisters, than with the rules. So much so that when people are mad at him for healing a man on the Sabbath, it says he is angered and grieved at their hardness of heart. Jesus is angry. Have you ever been sad and angry at the same time? This is how Jesus is, because their hard hearts would put a block, a gate, a stop to the healing mercy of God, because it's not on the right day. Jesus is primarily not interested in rules, but in people, and in opening the gates of God's love to them. Right away, the Supremes would say, quoting Mama, you can't hurry love, you just have to wait. The Pharisees would say, you can't hurry God's healing grace, you have to wait. Got to follow the rules. What we see in Jesus is God who is so concerned with your immediate needs that he wants to immediately address them at the most pressing place and to come to you. in your ordinary days, in your ordinary time. And he wants to do so all the way to the cross. God, for you, that's what Jesus shows us. When God comes to earth to most clearly show you who he is, it's a God who is not interested in who deserves what, who is allowed or not. He comes to people who are hurt and hungry and opens the gates of God's grace. There's no need to hurry love because it's already here in Christ. Take that, Diana. Amen.